craft business back, okay? But the point is, yes, you had to say yes and impose those conditions, okay? That's what a conditional use is. Yes?
I hope this isn't going too far off, but that actually brings up, when is something vested to the point where then the city council, you know, they see a problem coming, they can't fix it in the meantime because it's vested, but I don't know exactly where that point is.
All right, well, I'll segue into that. Okay, I'll just finish this little piece that I'm about to finish uses, and I'll segue into that because it segues really nicely. Yeah, the question, if they don't answer the question, tell me. The other thing that you need to know about conditional uses, though, and this is important as well, is you don't get to just make up conditions. Okay, you don't get to just say, well, we think that this is going to be a detrimental effect, so we're going to just toss this condition in. Okay, and this is, a lot of people don't know this, but the conditions you impose on a conditional use permit have to be related to standards that are in your ordinance. What I mean is that your ordinance has to have written down in it certain standards that you want your community to be. It's like goals, right? We want our community to be this quiet and have this level of traffic and have this kind of lifestyle and space and all that kind of stuff. You have to have those in your ordinance. And then you can impose conditions as long as you can connect the condition to one of those standards. Okay? If you can't connect your condition to one of those standards, okay, you can't impose the condition. And your standard has to be something objective, or at least objective-ish. Your standard can't just be matches the general character of the community. That's not the standard. Your standard can't just be whatever the Planning Commission thinks it ought to look like. There's nothing objective there. You have to have an objective standard in your ordinance that matches the condition that you impose. As long as you have that, as long as you do that, you can go ahead and impose conditions. But you remember, the only way you can say no to a conditional use permit is if it is impossible to mitigate the detrimental effects, mitigate, not eliminate, to mitigate the detrimental effects by imposing conditions.
Is that the same as in the master plan?
Yep. Well, here's the thing. You always got to understand that the master plan is advisory. Okay? Master plan doesn't have any force of law. Right? That's not to say it's not important. Right. A good community has a good master plan and follows it. Okay? But you're not obligated to follow your master plan. So it's only advisory, it's not a legal document. Okay? So when you impose conditions, your conditions have to relate to standards that are in your ordinance. Right? Not in just the master plan. Does that make sense? So before I segue to her question, I want to know if there's any unclarity about what I just said about conditional uses, especially for me and you guys. I know this is a whole lot of conditional uses.
So, you can answer after you answer first, but my question for you would be, if not Planning Commission, then who?
Okay, that's a good question. The question was, if not Planning Commission, then who? Okay. That also kind of segues into her question, so I'm going to answer both questions at the same time. Everything you do in government, every decision you make in this room, okay, is one of two kinds of decisions. Anybody tell me what they are?
Legislative
amendment. Have you ever seen those kind of videos? Have any of you ever watched those?
Yeah.
That was pretty dumb.
Yeah.
They're either legislative or administrative. It's important to understand the difference. Okay? Legislative decision makes the law. It makes the law. If you're making a legislative decision, you're changing the books. You're changing your ordinances. So, you create a new ordinance, that makes law. You amend an ordinance, that makes law. You create a new zone, that makes law. You amend a zone, that makes law. You apply a zone that wasn't applied over here, you apply it over here. That makes law. It changes the books. Right? It makes law. Legislative decision. An administrative decision doesn't make law, it applies the law. So if someone comes with an application for a conditional use permit, an application to subdivide something, right? You're taking your laws on subdivisions, and you're looking at that application, you're applying that your laws to that application. Right? Whether or not that works, you know, that is an administrative decision. Okay? The reason why it's important to know the difference, well, there's lots of reasons, but one of the reasons why it's important to know the difference comes back to our high school civics class. Okay? In Cedar Hills, I want you to tell everybody in Cedar Hills, or American Fork for that matter, who has the authority to make legislative decisions?
City Council.
The council, that's correct. Very good. Who else? Trick question. Nobody.
No one can.
Why does the council have that authority?
They were elected.
Because they were elected. Yeah, we gave them that authority by voting for them. Okay? But we only give that authority to people we elect. That's the checks and balances, right? We don't like the laws that they're giving us. We don't like what they're telling us what to do. We boot them, right? And we get somebody in there who will do what we want them to do. Okay? Now, the Planning Commission, do they do anything legislative?
Make recommendations.
We recommend.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You make recommendations to the council, right? That's a legislative job. You're not actually making the law, right? Because that's only they have that job. But you making recommendations, that's a legislative role. That's important to know that. It's a legislative thing that you're doing. Okay? And there's lots of reasons why we need to know that. We can go into all of them. We can get all night. We don't want to do that. But only the council can make legislative decisions, and they cannot make legislative decisions about land use law without first receiving a recommendation from the Planning Commission. It's that important. Land use laws are so important that we've decided in Utah that we have to have two sets of eyes looking at them, the council and the commission, and the council cannot act without a recommendation first. You have to have a recommendation for that. You have to follow the recommendation. That was very, you jumped right on that, right? That experience. No, they don't. You don't have any obligation to follow the recommendation, but you have to receive one. It's that important, right? And when we were talking about the role of the Planning Commission, okay? That's your main role, okay? Your main role in Cedar Hills or wherever you are is to plan. You're called the Planning Commission. They're not called the Conditional Use Permit Commission. They're called the Planning Commission. Right? And that's how you should be spending all your time, is looking at your ordinances, looking at your policies, looking at your plan, making sure it is up to date and reflects what Cedar Hills is supposed to be. Make sure it reflects what the people of Cedar Hills want. Okay? Make sure that it's fine-tuned and right and clear and not vague and ugly and hard to work with. Right? That's your main job. You should be making recommendations to the council all the time. Most places don't. It's too bad. Because I have not seen a single set of codes that doesn't warrant significant improvement. Right? It needs to be updated. It doesn't need to be updated in some way or another. Yeah.
So part of that was what people want. The people obviously want the children not dying instead of 15 minutes earlier, which would mean don't build anything anytime ever.
Uh-huh.
So how do we balance that between everybody's development rights and property ownership rights and nobody wants anybody to build anything ever?
That's a great question. That's a great question. People's development rights, where do they come from? People's rights and ability to develop, where does that come from? People have the right to own and use their property. That's constitutional, okay? But my right to build a strip joint, where does that come from? The city ordinances.
Police powers.
Yeah, well, you get to make ordinances because you have police powers. The ability to make ordinances and, like I said, tell people what to do is a function of your police powers, which is the power to ensure the health, safety, and welfare of your citizens, okay? That's why you have that ability, okay? Right? And so you make ordinances, and the ordinances is what gives people the right to develop. Okay? But here's the thing, okay? This is gonna make you go crazy with power. You think you have power before, but you don't. Here's the thing. Their entire right to develop comes from your ordinances. You have the right to make the ordinances, which means that you have the right to decide what gets developed. Okay? They don't have an inherent right to develop outside of that. They have a right to use their property in some way, and you cannot make your ordinances so people can never develop. That's the key. Okay? But you have a right to say how they're going to develop and where they're going to develop and how dense it's going to be and what it's going to look like. All that springing from your police power. You have that right. Okay? So the question is, how do we balance that how do we balance the needs of the community who want nothing ever built anywhere with the rights of developers to develop? Well, you decide, in consultation with the community, how you want developers to happen, and you put that in your ordinances, and that's the only right they have. That's where they get the right. So honestly, if the community of Cedar Hills said to you, okay, we understand, well, first of all, we don't want anybody to ever build anything, right? Well, they can't do that, that's a taking, right? Okay, so we understand then, we want every property in Cedar Hills to have a 1 acre zone. Every property. 1 acre, you have to have an acre, or you can't build. We want that, okay? And you say to yourself, okay? And so you make an ordinance that says that, all right? And somebody comes along with 5 acres, and you tell them they can only have 5 homes. What happens? They get 5 homes. Because their right to develop came out of your ordinances. Right? And what can they do about that? Nothing. Nothing. As long as you have it completely wiped out. As long as you've given them some way to do something with their land. Right? So the community all says that, right? If you want to do that, you can do that. Okay? That would be stupid for a lot of reasons, right? Your community is gonna be much better if you have some good growth, good things happening, and you know that, right? So you have to kind of balance that, right? But that's the way you balance it is by putting it in your ordinances, by putting what the community wants in your ordinances, because once it's in your ordinances, that dictates their rights. The important thing to realize is that unless it's in your ordinance, you can't tell people what to do. You have to make the ordinances, right? Because if you don't, they can do whatever they want. If the ordinance doesn't say anything, I can do anything I want with my land because it's my land, and the Constitution says I have a right to use my land, right? That's the underlying right. That's important to understand, too. That's the underlying right. We all, everyone who owns property, your right is to do anything you want on your land. Zoning codes and land use codes are the exception to the rule. The rule is I can do anything I want. We are going to tolerate this exception of zoning codes. Okay? But you have to put it in the code. You have to put it in the code. So if somebody comes along and says, I want to build a pig farm in the middle of Cedar Hills, has anybody ever been near a pig farm? Holy mother of mercy, those things smell bad. If somebody comes along and says, I want to build a pig farm, and your code doesn't say anything about pig farms, what do they get to do? Build a pig farm. Yeah?
But we don't like it, even if we didn't build a code. You still like it. There's all the political pressure, right? So we're just not going to approve it. Why can't we just not approve it?
I did not plant him here. How you doing?
Good. You're doing well, Brett. We just don't like it.
Yeah, see, that's my point, okay?
It ruins my view.
Yeah, well,
it's simple.
It might ruin your view, and it might make your kids sick, and it might do all sorts of things, okay?
What if the code says something kind of vague, or like, nothing that smells bad, or something?
Well, see, the more vague, the more up to challenge you are, the less likely it's going to work, okay? Actually, even though your code almost certainly doesn't say anything about pig farms are almost certainly prohibited. Okay, and the reason why is because your code probably says, and if it doesn't say this, put it in there quick. If we haven't listed it as permitted or conditional, it's prohibited. So we've listed our permitted, we've listed our conditionals, everything else is prohibited. Okay, it probably says that will include pig farms. But the point that I'm making is no matter how much you don't like it, no matter how much you don't like it, somebody comes along with something that your code does not prohibit them from doing, and you don't like it, and 100 people are lined up here and they don't like it, and it's horrible, but your code doesn't address it, they get to do it. Because you didn't put it in your code. You have to put things in your code. You do not have flexibility. If you came to work on a planning commission on the city council, thinking, I'm going to go there and I'm going to stop all this stuff that's happening, okay? you lose. Because the only thing that can stop all this stuff that's happening is your code. Now, you have the power to put things in your code, but unless your code says it, you can't do it. You do not have flexibility. You do not ever say to somebody, tell us what you want to do, and we'll decide yes or no whether or not we'll let you do it. You don't get to do that. Because it's your code that does it. When you're making a legislative decision, and this, I'm still on you guys' question, so we'll get to it. When you're making a legislative decision, okay, you're deciding policy at that point. You're deciding what's going to be in my code, right? And that's the time when you should be aware of what the citizens want and what's best for the city and what you want here, what you want there, and you put that in your code, right? That's the legislative part, okay? And so that is, you have tremendous latitude to do that. And you can do any number of considerations to decide how to do that, right? Including people saying children will die. If you believe that the children will die, put something in your code that prevents them from doing something that will make the children die. That's great. But it's got to be in your code. Right? Or you're awesome. When you're making an administrative decision, when you're applying the law to somebody's application, okay, your only decision, and this is when you're doing a conditional use permit, remember this, your only decision at that time is, does this application comply with our code? It's never, do we like this? It's never, do we want this? It's never, do I like the look of that guy? That is never part of the consideration for an administrative decision, for a conditional use permit. It's, does this application comply with our code? If it does, the answer is yes. If it doesn't, the answer is no. Simple as that. So liking it is not a factor. It's not a factor at that time. Now, get to some of the questions involved here, okay? She asked, if not planning commission approved, about conditional uses, okay? Well, you can do what you want. You can have the planning commission do that, okay? A lot of places are going away from that. A lot of places are assigning staff to handle conditional uses. Why? Because the planning commission is trying to spend their time planning. Okay? The answer is anybody can go. Right? The rule is that as far as a legislative decision, only the council can make that decision with a recommendation from the planning commission. But as far as administrative decisions go, conditional uses, subdivisions, anybody can do it. You can assign me to do your conditional use permits. Just don't. But you could, and that's totally fine, right? So you can have your planning commission do it, you can have staff do it, right? Taking some of that away from the planning commission will free them up to do other things if that's what's best for your community. That's the best. So you're not spending all your time doing that, you're able to do your planning job, okay? I know some places that have completely taken subdivisions and conditional uses away from planning commission and other things like that. I know some places where they have sort of screening process, where the simple conditional use permits are decided by staff, and the more complicated ones are the ones that are more likely to cause the neighborhood to get up in arms. Those are still heard by the planning commission, right? And then staff heard here's an easy move and stuff like that. You can do any number of those things. But the point is to you need to make a change if you're not planning. If you're not spending any time making these recommendations, going through the code, going through the general plan, if you're not ever doing any of those kinds of things, think about how you're spending your time and whether or not you're spending your time in the best way. Okay? And there's a cycle you gotta understand too. Okay, there's a cycle. Okay? Bad ordinances lead to controversial conditional use permit questions and conditional use permit and subdivision questions. And having to spend more time on those and having to scratch our heads saying, what does this mean? And not knowing and consulting with the attorney and having the attorney charge you a huge fee and having people line up out the door and all that kind of stuff. Okay? That's all a factor of having bad code. Okay? If you spent your time making the code better, you would spend less time doing those other things because they would be better. You would know exactly. You wouldn't have vagueness in your code. You wouldn't have things where the attorney has to say, well, I think it might be this. Let's call the ombudsman and see what he thinks, and then have to get an opinion from me, which takes forever. or, you know, people lining up out the door saying, you can't do this, because you just get up at the beginning of the meeting and says, our law says this. We have to do it. We're doing it. Right? And suddenly you get home at 9 o'clock instead of midnight. You see what I'm saying? If you use your time better up front and make better codes, okay, then you don't have to spend as much time messing around with your stupid code. Your code is not sacred. It's not scriptures, man. Okay? It should change. It can change, and it should change. Right? And it should change as often as you need it to, or it work. Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Okay. Any questions about that so far? That's a whole lot of blah, 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 blah. Yes?
So, okay. Questions and conditional uses and things are determined by our code, and it's either a yes or no. And it's not up to us to say whether we like it or not. Or
with an administrative decision, yeah.
Okay. So why do we have public comment and why are we here?
That's a great question.
I'm not trying to be like...
Oh,
you
know. That's a great question.
So what's my goal, I guess? Like, why do we have that?
I'm going to answer that question this way. Okay. There is absolutely no requirement in state law that you have public comments for administrative questions. You don't have to.
It just muddies it.
Yeah.
If we don't have a choice, then it just makes us cry.
It does. There's only one time in the entire land use process where you have to have a public comment. There's only one time that you have to. Okay? And that's for legislative decision and planning commission. Planning Commission has to hold a public hearing when they're doing something legislative, when changing the, Harold.
Sorry, I keep walking in and out. I'm trying to avoid someone calling the property rights office.
Okay, thank you. When you're doing a legislative decision, like you're going to amend the code, like you're going to rezone someplace, when you're changing the general plan, you have to hold a public hearing then in Planning Commission. Most places will also hold one in city council. You don't have to. You can. That's fine. Tons of places I know of will also hold them for administrative decisions in planning commission and probably in council. Okay? There is no law that says you have to do that. If your code says you have to do it, you have to do it, right? Because your code is the law, right? So there's nothing in the state law that does that. And a lot of places have eliminated them. They don't do it anymore. Because like you said, it just muddies the water.
Yeah.
People come, scream, children will die, okay? And we have a phrase for that. Well, see, here's the thing. That's a good point. Okay? He just said we won't get reelected, okay? That's why the Planning Commission is not elected.
Right.
Because you should be free of that. Right. The council has to worry about getting reelected. And if they want to worry about getting reelected, they should be making sure that their legislative decisions are good. That the code is good, right? And that reflects what the people want, because then the people will love them and vote for them, okay? But sometimes as planning commissioners, you have to make tough decisions, and you have to make unpopular decisions. I mean, you've seen it, right? And you would get voted out of office. You probably already been voted out of church. And you probably already don't get to go to the grocery store, right? Because you volunteer for this duty, okay? But you have to do that, right? And it has to be popular, but you shouldn't be afraid of whether or not you're going to get reelected to do that. You have to. Because sometimes you're going to have to make unpopular decisions. But there is no requirement that you have a public hearing. There isn't. Here's the thing. You might want to consider when and where you do have those public hearings. Okay? And I'm not talking about public comment periods at the beginning of the meeting. What I'm talking about is we're hearing this conditional use, but it's here for the public. Okay? Because when the public gets up there and they line up, just like when I was at Kaysville Planning Commission meeting not too long ago, 25 people lined up, and every single one of them said the same thing. If you say yes to this, children will die. They all said that. Okay? We have a word for that. It's called clamor. Right? What happens if you make an administrative decision based on public clamor?
We get a visit here.
And I'm going to go like this to you, because you cannot, it's not legal to make administrative decisions based on public clamor. Okay? You can make all the legislative decisions based on public clamor if you want to. because that's a policy, that's not your main policy. But as far as administrative decisions, you make it based on public clamor, you're breaking the law, and so people come and they give you all this clamor, right? And they try to influence you, and pretty soon you're influenced because these people are important to you, right? You like them, they're your neighbors. And besides, you think children will die too, right? And so you make your decision based on that. You have broken the law, the developer's gonna be mad, they're always gonna go to their friends, install it, new law's gonna be passed, and that law that's gonna be like this is your decision. That's what's gonna happen. I don't know that all the time. Now, there are maybe some good reasons to have public comment, even for administrative decisions, which you're free to do, you don't have to. I can think of two good reasons, and maybe you guys can think some more. One reason I can think of is because of general politics. You know, people think that they have a right to be heard with this. You don't always have the right to be heard. You have the right to be processed, which is different. Okay? But just because something's happening doesn't mean you get to say something about it. And it also doesn't mean that people have to do anything about what you say. Okay? If you've given them that right by holding a public hearing, then they get to speak. Right? But if you start to tell people that they can't speak, you know, they might not be happy. Right? Even though they don't even have the right to speak, and you tell them they don't have the right to speak, they get upset. Okay? So there's politics. That's, you know, a lot of people want to relieve the pressure by having a public hearing. And if you're doing that, you're paying the price by saying you're not going to talk. I mean, that's your problem. If you want to do that. The second reason, maybe the one valid reason to listen to hear from the public in an administrative decision is because you can make administrative decisions based on evidence. Evidence. Evidence of what? Evidence that the application complies with your ordinance. Remember, that's the only question you're asking. Okay. You have to have evidence of that. Evidence is facts. It's proof. It's relevant, provable facts, okay? Children will die is not evidence, okay? They approved this three times over, and the statistics show that the children death rate went up by 25%. Is that evidence? No. It's not, because it doesn't prove whether or not this application complies with the ordinance. Right? But somebody might come along and say, and actually have real evidence for you that you can consider, real facts that you can consider. Right? And you might have 50 people lining up a planning commission meeting, 49 of them have clamor, one has evidence. That's valuable. That's valuable. Right? So that is one valid reason to hold a hearing, okay? But a 99% of the conditional use permits you're gonna hear or anything else like that, that's not gonna happen. That's not gonna happen. Not gonna get evidence out of those. So why are you holding public hearings?
It sounds like you hear a lot of clamor on a specific point. Sometimes you try to maybe courteously ask the developer, could you consider like maybe adding a tree here or something else? Because, you know, according to the clamor, it's going to save at least 17 children's lives. and it's looks kind of good natured. You know, I know it's not entirely lawful, but, you know, did they put two more trees there and then you make those five people happy and get reelected, Brent?
Yeah. There's a lot of truth to that. Here's the thing. Most developers I know are not evil. Okay?
See that picture right here?
Okay. People have this perception that the developers around here are, that all every developer is evil. Every developer is bad. Most that I know are not. They're trying to make a buck. Okay? Which, heaven forbid, people try to make a buck in America. Okay? But most of them I know are not evil. Most of them are willing to have discussions like that. Right? They want to be good neighbors. They want their product to sell. They want their customers to be happy, right? And so the neighborhood wants a certain thing. You know, you chat with them, you ask them about it. A lot of them would be willing to, okay, you know what, we can put a little park here, or we can plant these trees or whatever, stuff like that. You know, if it makes financial sense for them, especially. And having that conversation, there's nothing wrong with having that conversation as long as you remember that there's a difference between persuasion and force, okay? Them being willing to do something is very different from you being able to require it, okay? What can you require people to do? What can you tell them? You don't have a choice, you have to do this. Only the stuff in your ordinances. If what they want to do, right, is allowed on your ordinances, you do not have to go to get to say no to that. You've been over that, okay? But if you want to ask them if they'll do such and such a thing, okay? And if they are free to say no, that's fine. As long as they're free to say no, I'm not going to do that. Just thought I'd ask.
And that would take place in the commission meeting?
It could.
To say?
It could take place with the meetings with staff. Take place in meetings when we're sitting down with the planners.
So we're allowed to kind of make a suggestion. Like, it sounds like people are interested in this. Would you be?
You need to be super careful about how. Yes, you need to be super careful about not even implying that you're trying to require it. Not even implying that if, hey man, if you don't do this, you know, we might not be able to say yes to you. Yeah. Right? You're especially safe if there's a quid pro quo. Hey, you know what, if you'll do this for us, we'll do that for you. Right? And then, you know, if that gets complicated, you're gonna want to develop an agreement that gets pretty deep, right? But having that conversation is okay, right? But you have to be super careful, because when you say, would you be willing to do this? They're hearing, you're gonna do this, or we're gonna say no to you, right? And if you're doing that, that's when you really get into some dangerous territory. Does that make sense?
If a previous city council grants an exception to zoning law, is that legally enforceable to a future city council?
That is another great question. I mean, all these questions have been great.
Because we're going through exception.
Stuff like that.
I won't use the word, but it's not a good situation.
Okay, I'm gonna tell you the answer. Right, I'm gonna tell you the answer into it. First, I'm gonna use one word to tell you the answer, and then I'm gonna use two words to tell the answer. I'm gonna use one word is no. Two words is heck no. Three words is good heck no.
Yeah.
So it's not enforceable.
You do not set a precedent by making a decision.
Because what concerns me is developers. I'm sure there are some good somewhere, but the developers will use the threat of litigation to bankrupt the city to get us and the city council to capitulate. And
well, if their threat of litigation is based on precedent, they will lose. Okay? Here's the thing about that. Especially, okay, again, this. When I said at the beginning we're going to try to paint a good picture, I hope this picture starts to become clear. If it's in your ordinances, you need to follow those too, right? If it's in your ordinances, that's what they get to do, okay? If you've allowed something that has violated your ordinances, that has broken your own ordinances, okay, what have you done? The city has broken the law.
So, are you saying that exceptions then are a manifestation of poorly written code?
They can be. They can be, right? And I want to make a distinction here between going against the code and interpreting it a certain way, because those are two different things. The same result, those two different things, okay? Say your code says that you have to have a certain height restriction, right? And somebody comes along and asks for a bigger height restriction, you let them have it. Okay? You let them, because you didn't say you wanted that. Right? So you let them have a height restriction. You have now broken the law because you have to follow your own code. And you have violated people's property rights. The developer might be happy as a clan, but whose property rights have you violated now? The neighbors.
Okay, so if there is to be an exception, or if you were wanting to do as you suggest, which is examine the code and tighten it up, is that something that must be done by public vote, or is that something the city council could do?
City council could do that.
There's no public vote required.
No public vote whatsoever. As a matter of fact, I have been in meetings, okay, where the person running the meeting, the chairman, has asked for a public vote on a particular thing. Right? And I was sitting there wishing I was a developer, because as soon as you ask for that, you have, you're going to lose a lawsuit. You have a lawsuit in hand, you're going to lose. And this is not getting into the question, I mean, boy, this is getting deep, and I don't want to get deep. But this is not getting the question of referendum stuff, which we hear about a lot right now. That's a totally different thing. Okay? We're just talking about the public voting and the meeting, right? But the thing is if you have broken the law as a community by allowing such a thing, okay, that does not give you the right, and especially not the obligation, to continually break the law again and again and again by proving the same thing again. Because every time you do that, you're breaking law again. And in America, we don't fix our broken laws by continuing to break them. However, if you don't care about the height of the buildings, why is it, does your law say that? When you can change it, you can change the law to change the height to what you want, and you can say this to everybody. But it's all about what's in the code. Okay? So I get this all the time, this question all the time, when people come to me and they say, I can walk down my street and I can show you house after house after house after house where the city approved, say, a front-facing garage. And they won't give me a front-facing garage. The garage has to be on the side for me. But my next-door neighbor on both sides have front-facing garages. Right? But I have to have a side-facing garage. Why? Right? Well, I say to them, what does the code say? The code says I have to have a side-facing garage. Well, then you have to have a side-facing garage. Well, my neighbors have a front-facing garage. So what? They cannot fix the problem by breaking the law again for you. If they want to have a lot of front-facing garages with you and everybody else, they should change their code to allow front-facing garages.
Or get a variance, right? I mean, aren't you touching on the variance process?
I'm kind of touching on the variance process, but I cannot think of a circumstance, just being specific to my particular example, I cannot think of a circumstance where a front or side-facing garage, well, no, I can't think of a circumstance. The thing about variances is variances do allow you to give exceptions to zoning ordinances, but they should be extraordinarily difficult to get.
And outline specifically in the code.
Well, not necessarily for variances. Okay? Boy, I'm like six questions ahead from where I need to go.
Cut on your garage example, you may have an irregular lot shape.
That's right. And that's what I was gonna say. An irregular lot shape. The person, in order to get a variance, has to have a very exceptional circumstance, okay? And that circumstance is not all of my neighbors have that garage. It's because they have a lot shape, because there's a canal right in front of there where their garage would be, right? And so they need to come out the front instead of the side, or stuff like that, where it's just not, it just can't do it because of their exceptional circumstances. But the circumstances are not precedent. They're never precedent.
Then anyone can circumvent the code by saying you need an exception to zoning.
Well, and that's what happens, but that's not what should happen. Okay? That's why I say that variances should be exceptionally difficult to get. There, in the state law, there are five requirements for variance, and several of them have some requirements. Okay? And in order to get a variance, you have to meet every single one of those requirements and sub requirements. Get a variance.
But anyone can apply for a variance.
Anyone can ask for one. But they should be difficult to get. Oh, I haven't answered the question, we're leaving.
But I have to go to state council.
Okay, I'll answer the question right now. Oh. Okay, here's the thing. What you're asking me about is vesting.
Yeah.
Okay? You vest as soon as you apply, as soon as you make the application, then it applies to the code. Okay?
If it complies with the code.
As soon as you make the application, you pay your fee, and it applies to the code, you have vested at that moment.
Outside the code and that they aren't applicable to the code, there it's
if their
it's
application,
or whatever,
if their application is so far away from the code that you would be able to say no to the application, they haven't vested. Okay. If they've applied and the application applies to the code, they vest the moment they apply, and you cannot change your code now to pull a rug out from under it. And it happens at the moment of application. That's the earliest vesting in the country. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, except for do they have to be 100% compliant with the code at that point in order for it to be vested?
Generally, yes. Okay, there are certain administrative things like not administrative. There are certain things that are just so minor that it really is not going to matter. You can send it back and you can say, you know, you have to make this adjustment because you know you spelled a word on the map wrong and stuff like that. Then yeah, they're still vested. But if they put a road somewhere where, if they're shown a road, for example, that doesn't comply with the road standards. They haven't done that. Because you would be able to look at it and say, no. Now, the right thing to do is to send it back and have it fixed. So you have that, then tell me what it is. Sorry.
So this is all along the same lines, kind of the grandfather in the pioneer problem. Like, one of the questions one of the situations I've seen several times is that politicians will go, and if it's a tough decision, they'll say, well, I think it's important to go back four decades and see what the council discussed and why they did it back then. I feel like that is so wrong. Am I right?
You're right. Okay. From a legal standpoint, okay, here's the thing. although precedent doesn't matter, okay, precedent can be persuasive. Remember when I was talking to him a second ago, I said I want to draw a distinction between things that violate the code and things that are just a question of interpretation. Okay? If you have something in your code that can be interpreted a couple ways, okay, you still are not obligated. You're not obligated to interpret it the same way the last body interpreted that, okay? But you're better off if you do, for a lot of reasons. First of all, it just avoids trouble, right? So you're not talking about violating your code, right? So in that case, you want to go back and you want to look and see how the last group interpreted that, right? And you want to say, because we want to be consistent, that's okay to do, right? You're not, from a legal standpoint, you're not obligated to follow that. But you just might want to, just because it's better for the town. You see what I'm saying? But you don't have to. But this is when we're talking about interpretation. And again, to come full circle and paint this picture, if there are provisions in your code that you're finding yourself having to interpret over and over again, okay, that's when the Planning Commission should jump into action and make that better so you don't have interpretation confusion, so that it's clear. Okay. Where were we? It's all gone. It's all out of my head.
Let's see. One other quick question.
Yeah.
On the ombudsman role specifically.
Uh-huh.
So I know you rendered an opinion for us recently.
I don't know if it was for you or not, but yeah, okay.
In our city. I know you're an independent third party. And you have some weight, but no real binding legal.
Correct. Right. Advisory opinions. My opinions are called advisory opinions. Okay. The purpose of advisory opinions.
So that's my question. Why do you exist? I mean, that's my
question.
not you personally, but I mean the whole. The role of
where did you come from? Why are you here?
You know, you're a great guy. I'm taking you wrong.
I exist. Well, to protect the property rights of the citizens of Utah, right? But really, my role, as far as from the city's perspective, is to resolve disputes. Okay? I'm trying to keep you guys out of court. I'm trying to keep you guys from losing lawsuits. Okay, that's what I'm doing.
I'm not complaining about the decision. I think you do a great service.
Yes, you are complaining about the decision.
No, I think you do a great service. I'm just wondering the explanation so that I can understand that even though it's not a binding decision, it has a lot of weight. But what gives you the weight? I guess that's kind of my question. Just to
It's hard to say. Just to provide some context for his question. My job is to keep you guys out of court with your citizens, okay? My job is to resolve disputes. Almost everything I do is aimed at that goal. It's aimed at trying to resolve cases. Okay? I do a lot of mediations, and I do these advisory opinions. Right? These advisory opinions are not binding opinions. They are when someone who has a potential land use dispute comes to my office, says, here's the dispute. I ask the city, what's your side of the story? The city tells me, figure it out, okay? And then we do our own research and we write an opinion where we're trying to predict what a court would say if it went to litigation. The purpose of that is to prevent it from having to go to litigation, right? Because if we can predict what a court will say, you know, if in any kind of persuasive way, okay, then people will look at it and say, I don't want to sue based on that, right? And so then it's lawsuits, and we've done about 200 advisory cases in the last decade, and I know like three of those have gone to court, resolved. Okay, that's what we're trying to do. Now the question of what gives it weight? I'll have to answer that question in 3 weeks. First of all, there is a legal thing that gives our advisory opinions weight, and that's this. If we issue an advisory opinion, okay, and people litigate it anyway, people, despite what the advisory opinion says, they take it to court anyway, okay? And if the court agrees with our opinion, that means if we were right, if the court issues an order, and the order is what our opinion said, so we were right, okay? The prevailing party can get attorney's fees from the other party. Okay? So if your opinion did not go in your way, you don't like it, you want to sue anyway, you want to go to court anyway, you know, or whatever, you go to court and we were right, you may have to pay the other side attorney's fees. That's the purpose of that is not resolving people getting attorney's fees. The purpose of that is people is giving weight to opinion so people take it seriously. Okay? That's the teeth of the opinion. Okay? Apart from that, that's the only legal weight that it has. Okay? Apart from that, the only two ways I can answer that question, what gives our opinion weight is we try really hard to be right. We really do. Okay? That's all we do is land use law all day long. And we research, and we write carefully, and we circulate opinion among the attorneys on my staff, and I do not sign opinions until I'm absolutely convinced that the opinion was right. Sometimes that's easy to do, sometimes not. Sometimes, you know, it can go both ways, or 60-40 or 75-25, you know, right? But we absolutely try our very, very best to be right. We do not issue those opinions lightly. Hopefully that provides us some way. And the third way that I can answer that is because I've been doing this for 11 years and this is all I do. And it's been successful, and so I hope to have a reputation for knowledge being all for that.
I will tell you to say something that you can't say. Very few judges have land use experience. And usually they are litigators and they're very few and so. Those judges know they don't know much. They see an opinion from them, and they know they could be humiliated if they don't rule by doing it. So we get through all the very good. Because even I think the appeals court and Utah Supreme Court, you know, realize that Brett knows more than they do. So Brett can't say that.
We'll never get into
that. I find that makes a lot of sense.
So they are highly just deferential.
There's an advantage to having a very narrow focus to my legal practice. Yes.
I have a question about the top right one there. If all of our decisions are based on the code, what's my role?
As planning commissioner?
Yeah. Why am I involved in that decision? If staff already knows the code well enough to know if that complies or not.
Well, best way to answer that question is throw right back at you. Why are you making those decisions?
Is it just redundancy? Is it just so that more people
agree? I think it's more than that. It's nice to have a body that has some understanding, at least, of what's going on, what's happening in the city, and what land use law, and who have received training and stuff like that to make those decisions. So in that way, the planning
is a good role. I guess my question
is
just
administrative,
not legislative.
Right. So, you know, there's some, you know, when you look around the town, you know, the city, planning commission might be the best place for that, you know, because they have the most knowledge as far as that goes. And so that's one of the reasons, but really, you just got to understand that your discretion in those decisions is limited to that. Does this apply? Does the code comply? Does this application apply to the code? That's the only thing you're looking at when you're doing those kind of things. And again, like I said a few minutes ago, okay, the number one thing you're supposed to be doing is planning. Okay. And the number two thing, which is related to the number one thing, is recommending ordinances. Okay. Those are the things you're supposed to be spending all your time doing. The best of the cities that I know of, their planning commission spends at least 50% of their time, probably more, doing those two things every week. working on ordinances, working on recommendations, working on making the code and the plan better. And then you get into the other things like conditional use permits and stuff like that. And that's fine because you may be the best body for that and the council can make that decision, but you may not. And, you know, like I said before, sometimes some places are saying we're taking that completely away from planning commission, give it to staff. If they were to do that to you tomorrow, if American Park City was to say, you are no longer hearing conditional uses tomorrow, okay, you would still have planning to do. You wouldn't be coming to me and sitting and wasting your time, okay? Because what I hopefully you would be doing is you would be saying, look, over there by Mitchell Orchards, okay, we need to make sure that that we're getting the kind of homes and the kind of configuration we want here. What do our ordinances say? You know, Brent said we need to make sure that our ordinances say a few things here. Do they say that? If they don't say that, we need to get that in there quick, stuff like that. That is your question. Yeah. Can we leave some questions sort of hanging? I'm here for anybody. This is a lot of information, and it's hard to walk away from these things without your brain getting them running. Carol?
This is the first time I've actually heard you talk this long without mentioning baseball. I just have to say that.
Harold is my neighbor, and we work together a lot because he works for Rocky Mountain Power, and we're good friends. So
that's all I have to say.
He knows more.
It's more important.
I'm an equal opportunity baseball fan. Normally, I'm a Detroit Tigers fan. I've lived here for 10 years.
Maybe because they're 25 games back. That's why you have a chance. Please go on, these people.
This year is the break. So, anyway. Okay. What else?
I know ULCT is a good resource, but as laws are changing every legislative session, does your office put out any kind of educational material on, here are the updated land use laws, this is what you as the Planning Commission need to be looking at this year?
Yes we do. We put it on a website, plus we do a lot of this kind of thing where we do presentations and answer questions and answers about it. I go to all those legislative meetings, not because I like them. I hate it. I hate the political process. I hate being in Salt Lake City. I hate watching those morons up there doing their thing.
Well, there's a council.
Okay. And some of you may want to be legislators someday, and it just drives me crazy. But I do that so I do know exactly where things came from, and so that I can answer questions about that. Okay. So. Yeah, I mean, we do have stuff. We have stuff on the website. We have seminars and stuff like that. I'm happy to come back here and do and talk about whatever happened in the last legislative session later.
I want to go back to legal developers. So, according to what I know, there's no difference between a developer asking to build something and a private property owner versus. And whether it ends up as a rental home or a homeowner occupied home or single family or duplex, none of that matters as long as it complies with the code, right?
That's right. Which means that if your code says says that you cannot rent your property, okay, whether it's a developer or whether it's an individual, they're going to have to follow that code. Okay. Now there's limits to that. Don't be sticking in your code. No one in Cedar Hill is going to rent the property. Don't do that. Okay, because you're not arguing in trouble to do that, right? But everyone has to follow the same law. Okay? Developers, in some ways, developers are better than just an individual wanting to do something on their property, right? Because developers, they have experience, they understand the law, and the fact that they want to make money is actually helpful to you, right? Because they have the same goal as you. They want something beautiful that people will want to live in. Right? That's what they want, otherwise they won't sell. Right? That's what you want, otherwise you're the town that's me.
Don't you think that's a little overly simplified, though? I think that their goal is not to build something beautiful, but to take advantage of market conditions and make as much money as possible, not necessarily taking into consideration the wants and needs of the community, because they don't live there. That's why, possibly, the homeowner has we'll do a better job than a developer, because the developer can shove on us an extremely dense community not have to deal with the results, and then go back to Texas and enjoy his $20 million property.
Your whole problem is you're too shy about expressing your opinion.
I kind of wish you was.
Yeah, I know. And no, I don't agree. I honestly don't agree, okay? And the reason why, okay?
No more, I'm just...
The reason why is the whole full circle that I'm talking about, okay? Experienced developers will expect one thing from you. They will expect you to comply with your ordinances. That's all they'll expect, okay? If something is in your ordinance saying they can't do it, they won't do it, okay? But if it doesn't say that, they, like all property owners, have the same property right, which, as I said before, is I can do what I want, right? And so they want to build something, your ordinance doesn't prohibit it, they have a right to build it, and that's all they want, is their right to be protected, right? That's why it's so important that you make sure that your code is good.
That'll agree on.
Right? So, now, yes, they want to maximize their profit. This is the United States of America. Yeah, you can't blame for that. It's, you know, it's a market thing, right? Markets dictate whether they're interested in building, okay? But you still have the right to tell them what they can and cannot do in your code. And developers are generally not coming to you and saying, I want to build this outside of your code experience sometime, right? But when you say to them, no, you can't do that because it's ugly, and they say to them, well, your code doesn't say I can't do it, and you say to them, well, screw you, you can't do it because you don't like it. They go to Washington, or they go to Salt Lake, talk to their friends, or they sue you, and you lose. That's awesome. So that's why I said they don't agree. Having said that, yes, I totally agree that they're in for the money, and that's what they want.
I was just defending the evil developers. I am one. I called you. I'm an evil developer, apparently, according to
you. No, but I remember you. You're not evil, you're just sort of bad.
Why do I do it, right?
Yeah.
Well, obviously it's for the money, and you're right. But as to defend developers, you can't sell a crappy product. So you are 100% right that the city, I mean, I'm a city council member too, but the city and developers have the same goal. And you talk about density. You can have beautiful projects with high density. Density is not evil.
And there's, I think you can be. Because then there's the aftermath of density, such as increased cost of infrastructure, maintaining the infrastructure.
That's a whole different
realm. It's a little different. If it fits, you have to look at it holistically. You can't just look at the...
Girls are both
different. No, I mean, the point is, if it's allowed, and there's... It's allowed in
next city. Crap does sell.
Here's the thing.
That's why ivory homes... And excuse me for ivory homes, but no, that's why he put signs up over where I live, calling ivory homes out for a crappy product, where they don't come back and honor their home warranty.
Here's the thing. This is a debate and a discussion and a disagreement that's gone on since the dawn of time. You can open up your newspaper any day and see something related to this discussion in there, and it's not going to go away. But what I'm going to say to you is this, okay? As city government employees, okay, you are going to do better if you focus on this, on the similarities and not the differences. The main similarity being, we want something that's beautiful, you want something that sells. Okay? Because that is largely aligned. Okay? If you do that, then the little differences are going to be much easier to work with in a lot of ways. Okay? You're going to be more likely to be able to have conversations with them about little things that they can add to make it nicer. You're going to be more likely to be able to have them not screaming and crying and yelling at you and having all sorts of bad feelings and bad, hurt things happening in your meetings, okay? If you focus on the positive. Now, I'm not pro-developer, I'm not pro-city. If I was, I wouldn't be able to do my job, okay? But I'm just trying to help you guys with some strategies of how you can make things work and more comfortable work.
I have question.
Yes?
I understand conditional use is better now. Can you help me a little bit with variances and how that's different?
Yeah. First of all, as a planning commissioner, you shouldn't have to worry about variances. Okay? Because variances, you're not allowed to hear variances. Only an appeal authority can hear variances. So if you have a board of adjustment,
yes.
Right? They have to hear variances. A lot of places don't have board of adjustments, they just have hearing officers. They have some other appeal authority assigned to hear variances. Only they can hear variances. The planning commission and the council cannot hear variances. But it's good to understand that, okay? A variance is a request for an exception from zoning requirement. The vast majority of variances I know happen are variances, people want variances on setbacks. Okay? A lot of times people want variances on height restrictions, but there's other things, okay? There are five, like I said, there are five specific requirements in the state law, with sub-requirements, that you have to meet in order to get a variance, and you have to meet all five. The main one, in my opinion, and the one that it's worth talking about here, is in order to get a variance, a person has to have some unique feature to their land, right, that makes a variance necessary, okay? So that means that if this guy has a rectangular piece of land, and this guy has a rectangular piece of land, and this guy has a rectangular piece of land, there will be no variance for any of them, because none of those are unique, right? But there are some pieces of property, like there's a wacky slope on them, right? Or like a ditch or a river or a canal running through them, or they're shaped like a triangle, or some weird feature of the land, okay? And when that weird feature of the land prevents them from being able to do something, right? Like they really can't build there unless they get a setback variance because it will be too close to some corner or something, okay? That's a good opportunity for variance. Another thing about a variance is the variance cannot be self-imposed, right? You cannot get a variance because of something that you did yourself, okay? I went to a meeting once where a person asked for a variance on a height on a garage. They wanted an extra high garage and asked for variance. And they asked them why they want a variance. And the answer was, because I just brought a brand new $200,000 RV and I don't want to park it in the sun. I want to be able to put it indoors, right? And it's massive, I need the height variance. What's the answer to that? No way, Joe.
No.
Because that is self-imposed economic variance, right? There's nothing unique about your property that makes you need to have a height exception. Right? You went and bought an RV. Not my problem. Harold.
Along those lines, and this may be more specific to our fellow American board, and so you may not know the answer. We recently raised that issue about variance, and we were told that it was, and I admittedly, the planning commissioner, don't know the code as well as the staff. They said that was really in the code that the planning commission could allow a different setback. And it was in the code that they, so that's a bad code.
Let's make a distinction. Are the planning commission giving out variances, or do they have some flexibility in setbacks?
Yeah, flexibility in setbacks.
Okay, if the planning commission is giving out variances, no, then you're in violation of the law.
Right.
Because only the appeal court can do it. Okay. I can see certain circumstances where the planning commission can have some flexibility with setbacks. Okay? Just like with everything else. Okay? I've seen codes, like for example with density. I've seen codes that say, the density is going to be between X and Y, right? And we get to decide where that is, okay? Those are dangerous to people. They're very dangerous. They're not necessarily illegal if they're handled right, okay? But they're dangerous.
And they're still considered administrative decisions.
They're still considered, that's why they're dangerous, okay? Because you're making an administrative decision based on not objective criteria. Okay? If there are objective criteria that you make that decision based on, you're okay, right? So you say, if your ordinance says you can have between 15 and 20% setback, okay? And it depends on, it depends on the shape of your lot, for example, okay? And so you can look at the shape of the lot and objectively determine what variance is best, that's fine. When it starts to be subjective, when it starts to be up to the whim of the planning commission, anything, you can have between 15 and 20, and it depends on what we think, right? That's when you're going to have a problem. That's when you're going to lose a lawsuit. Because administrative decisions need to be objective. They need to be objective. Because your authority to tell people what they can and cannot do on their land is limited to your ability to make ordinances. You are not allowed to tell people what they can and cannot do on their land without an ordinance. So when you're starting to say, this is what we think, so this is what you have to do, you have just told somebody what they can and cannot do in the land outside of the law. And that's a loss to us right there.
So that leads to my question. When the city has certain land use that's allowed for their residents, but then the homeowners association comes in and says, no, you can't do these things. For instance, short-term rentals. Like an Airbnb, if the city allows that and the homeowners association says no, is that legal?
Yeah, here's the thing about that. First of all, as a city, okay, what the HOA will say, you should not care less about. Okay? Because you don't have any authority, let alone need, to enforce HOA rules. Okay? Think about what I just said about telling people what to do. Okay? You got your ordinances, they get to tell people what to do. Okay, the HOA also gets to tell people what to do. Okay? But they don't have the ability to make law. So why did they get to tell people what to do?
Because you signed up for it and you knew it going in.
Because you signed up for it, okay? the rules of HOA are based on contract. They're not based on law. If you buy within an HOA, you are to enter into a contract with the HOA board and all the other residents to do a certain thing a certain way, okay? So they can enforce that contract just like you can enforce a contract. If I were to have a contract with you to buy my car and you don't do it, I can enforce that contract, and it's the exact same with the HOA, right? So HOA says that you have to have your grass can only be 3/4 of an inch long. And they come around and they measure your grass and it's an inch long. You have a violation of a contract, right? But you have not violated any laws. The city's job is not contract enforcement. The city's job is law enforcement. The HOA's job is not law enforcement. The HOA's job is contract enforcement. Right? So you've got to make sure that that stays separate. Okay? But you got to understand that it's based on contract in order to understand how it affects your rights. Okay? You're saying you won't do this because you agreed to not do this, not because the law is telling you you can't do it. And so if, you know, the HOA says that you should do something, the city says you can do something, and the HOA says you can't do it, well, they agreed to not do it. They're under contract to not do it. If they do it, you're not going to go after them because they're acting within the law. But the HOA is going to go after them because they violated their contract. Yes?
Okay, so it's not uncommon for us to deal with, like, have a developer that says, okay, we need 100, according to your code, we need 100 parking stalls. Mm-hmm. We'd like to be 95. Mm-hmm. Is that a variance? Is that just something that we have
Does your code say you have to have 100 stalls?
Yeah.
Then you have to have 100 stalls.
So we're just not allowed to entertain any kind of negotiations on that?
No, you can enter an agreement. So, I mean, we talked about that a little while ago. Quid pro quo agreements. Quid pro quo means I give you something and you give me something. There's what's called considerations. You know, in the law, that's what we call an agreement, quid pro quo. Okay. But you have to also have to follow your own ordinances, okay? Because if you break your own ordinances, you violated the community's property rights, the neighbor's property rights, okay? But you are allowed to enter into agreements. So if somebody comes along and says, well, if I only have to have 95 stalls, I will do this, you know, I will extra landscaping, or I will, you know, put, you know, fancy brick on my property instead of siding or something like that, okay? That's permissible to do that.
But that's still breaking the law.
It is, and that's why you need to be very careful about stuff like that. You need to be very careful about it. Development agreements are allowed.
Well, obviously you'd be familiar with the development on SR 92 with the museum.
Why is it obviously?
Because you're a land use person, I'm sure that is of interest to you. It's a big museum. Pardon me?
It's like the Mount Vernon.
It's Mount Vernon.
Where is this?
You're not familiar with it? That surprised me. Okay. It's SR 92, you know where the Longhorns are at 6000 West and SR 92.
A big bird lawn.
Okay, so Patterson wants to develop that land. Part of it, they want to be a replica of Mount Vernon and make it a working
museum.
They want to get away from using the word plantation because that kind of upset.
That's a political talk.
Literally upset crying people. It was an amazing meeting. And
What town is it?
It's in Thailand, and in Thailand, the founding father is racist, but that's a different story.
Oh, boy.
The other part was mixed use, commercial.
But I think we have our issues, and I listen to Iowa, and I don't feel so bad.
And single family homes and senior housing. And they wanted exceptions to, or variances to many parts of the zoning laws. Height restrictions, lighting restrictions, signage restrictions. And they said, oh, we're very close on an R120, only a few houses short, something like that. So basically they wanted to break the law in about 20 different ways. The only thing that they could really do, and we couldn't stop them, was the museum, because it was permitted under conditional use.
Very good.
And then you can't really fight Patterson in that case, because then you would go bankrupt, because they had a legal precedent and a law on their side. So they are asking to break about 6 laws. And so we recommend that you know. Because of those laws.
Awesome.
And so what they're going to do, because they can, I suspect they will sit out different city councils until they find one that's more amenable to their case.
They can do that.
Yeah. It's a very interesting, it's an interesting case, but I never thought of it that a variance was actually permission to break the law.
Yeah, but it doesn't, there's no ground for variance in what you're talking about there.
There is no ground.
Yeah.
Now, but they pulled the children who died. They said workers at the senior housing will come, women will come out at night to go in their cars, and if we don't get a variance to the lighting issues, they will be attacked. So that's the equivalent of children who died.
You have to follow your own ordinances.
But it's very effective because I don't want anyone to shoot attack, but we still said no.
Where there's flexibility as to what your ordinances mean and what your ordinances say, they win. You need to understand that. A tie goes to the developer. Okay? So if your ordinance says 50 parking spots, you have to say 50 parking spots. Okay? If your ordinance says enough parking spots, right? And they come along and they say, we think this is enough parking spots, and you say, we don't think it is, okay? They win. The tie goes to the developer. The what the state law says, and this comes from the Utah Supreme Court, it says that when code is vague and needs to be interpreted, it gets interpreted in favor of the developer. I mean, I didn't make that rule up. That's the rule. Another reason why the planning commission should be spending its time planning, making better rules, so that that's specific. But you got to understand, when things are vague, you cannot say, this is where, the way we want it, even though it doesn't say that, because they win.
Okay, so what about planning developments and rezoning to something that it's not to allow for whatever use we want? So let's say it's zoned agriculture, or it's even zoned mixed use, but things don't work. They can ask for whatever they want. We can say no, but they can say, well, we'd like to rezone it to this to allow whatever density with whatever parking, and it's possible, right?
Yep. Well, see, here's the thing. A rezone is a legislative decision.
Yeah.
Okay? And it's helpful to understand the standard of review for legislative decisions. What I mean by standard of review is if somebody doesn't like the decision you made and they sue, what's the court going to ask? What questions the court's going to ask? And the court's going to ask, okay, was the decision, your decision to either say yes or no to the rezone, is it reasonably debatable that the decision was in the public's best interest? Okay? So someone comes and asks you for a rezone, and you say no. They don't like it, they sue you. Okay? The court is going to sit there and say, was it reasonably debatable that you saying no was in the public's best interest? Listen to that. Reasonably debatable. That is such a low standard. Can I look someone in the eye and say, I think that this was best for the city? If you can do that, you win. And that's whether you said yes or whether you said no to the same application. That's if you said yes to this guy's request and no to this guy's request. They're still going to ask the same question. They're not going to say, did they say yes last time? They're not going to say that. They're going to say, is it reasonably debatable that that decision was in the public good? And you know what? Both are going to be reasonably debatable. If you say yes, it's going to be reasonably debatable. If you say no, it's going to be reasonably debatable. So yeah, somebody comes along with a zone change, and you decide you want it, and you say yes, and the citizens of Laurel Mat, and they sue, they're also going to lose. Because it's reasonably debatable.
They can do a referendum.
They can do a referendum. Wow, can of worms. Worms everywhere. Worms just swarming.
What are you speaking at? This has been great.
The thing about referendums, with referendums, okay, the citizens have a constitutional, in Utah, they have a constitutional right to legislate. Okay? So they elect legislators to make laws, right? But they have a constitutional right to legislate themselves through referendums of it. Which means that if they get enough votes, they can get something on the ballot. And if they get something on the ballot, they can overturn any legislative decision you made, including a rezoning, including an amendment. Okay? That should scare you. Because that is a lawsuit waiting to happen against the city, that the city is going to lose, not from their own fault. Okay?
Why would the city lose if it's a constitutional right?
Because what happens is that the city approves something, okay, and that gives the developer certain rights, okay, and then the citizens get together and do a referendum, and they take that away, okay. That guy, all he has to do is sue and say that I had a right, a property right that was taken away, I'm taking right there. And they go after the city. And so the city has to say to the citizens, yeah, we got to raise taxes now because of your referendum. Because we haven't failed this judgment.
That's not democracy, that's democracy.
Yeah. And the worst part is, this referendum, and this is another reason why it should scare you. And some of you may be involved in a referendum, and you may take exception to what I have to say if that's the case. I don't care. The worst part is that when people are doing a referendum, okay, they have to get a certain number of signatures, and they have to get them fast. Okay? How do they do that?
Maybe.
What they do is they hire a bunch of students. And they tell the students to go to door and say this. Okay? They need to say one or two things. Are you concerned about the safety of your community? Well, yeah, I am. I've been signed here. Yeah. Or even worse, okay, and this is the plan B question people are informed. They say, don't you want to have a say? Don't you want to have a say in what happens in Cedar Hills? Yeah, I want to have a say in what happens in Cedar Hills. I've been signed here. Because if you sign here, we're going to get this on the ballot, and then you're going to get the vote. And then you'll have a say. So people just sign it like crazy. As fast as they can. And then it goes to referendum and all sorts of chaos.
But just to be clear on that, if I understand correctly, if it's a conditional use and it's approved, that cannot be a referendum. Because administrative, there is no referendum process.
Correct. Correct. The Metropolitan, the Cottonwood Mall thing, okay? The whole dispute in the Cottonwood Mall thing is whether or not what the city did was administrative or legislative. That's what the Supreme Court is deciding right now, okay? The court below, the city did two things. They amended the area plan, the plan for they didn't amend the general plan, okay? They just amended the plan for that development, and they amended the development agreement, okay? The court below said amending the development agreement was administrative, but amending the site plan was legislative. Okay? And so they're going to the Supreme Court to decide exactly that. Okay? Because if it's administrative, there's no referendum. If it's legislative, there's going to be a referendum, there's going to be a vote. Yeah.
Maybe I didn't ask my question about the plan. So explain that to me a little bit more. A planning and development doesn't have to comply with the regular zoning, right? Like it can act, it's almost like what nature is, we can do more or less than what's required in the underlying zone.
It depends on what your planning and development says, but generally the purpose of a planning and development is to is to offer development flexibility as far as mixes of uses and densities and stuff. Okay, so you have a plan unit development, which are, you know, normally we have zones. Commercial's over here, that's where the stores go. Residential's over here, that's where the people go. Purpose of a plan unit development is to say we're going to plan things in a little, with a little bit more sophistication here. Okay, so there's going to be some mixed uses. There's going to be some residential here. There's also going to be some commercial here, and some different kind of other kinds of uses. And we're going to all mix them together, and we're going to kind of work together to come up with something that works. You know, there's a lot of buzzwords that come out of this, like transit-oriented development and stuff like that. You know, with these plan unit developments, it provides. It's zoning for one, and it provides more flexibility for you guys in determining what happens in a certain area, and for the developer in determining what works. Okay? A lot of places use them as overlay zones, which means you'll have an underlying zoning and then you'll add a plan unit development overlay zone to it. Right? But that kind of thing is perfectly legal. Normally, you want to make it, as I said, a lot of as objective as possible.
And it's a rezoning, right?
Like, it is a rezoning. Imposing a plan unit development, making plan unit development available is a rezone. Whether you change the zone to plan unit development zone, or whether you do an overlay zone for plan unit development zone, either way, it's a zone change, which is a legislative decision. Did I still not get to your question?
I think those. Yeah. It was kind of related to his Mount Vernon. So they could have requested a rezone to a planning and development to include all of these things as long as the height restrictions were somewhat the same.
Right? If the city of Highland has a planning and development zone,
it does.
Okay. And if the planning and development zone contemplates and allows what they wanted to do, you know, they could have asked for that rezone. Okay. But the rezoning is a legislative decision, which means the city can say yes, or the city can say no.
As long as there's a reasonable argument.
As long as it's reasonably debatable, which it is. I mean, here's the thing, okay? Reasonably debatable is such a low standard that there is no case in Utah where anybody successfully challenged it. None. Ever. Matter of fact, I don't know of a case in the United States of America where anybody successfully challenged that low standard. So let's say they decided to allow that rezone to happen, okay? And say that what they wanted to do, you know, fit within the parameters of the plan unit development zone, you know, even with the flexible parts, you know, and everything, it all fit within the parameters. They're good to go. But the city could also say no. We don't want the plan unit development here. And so what they want to do doesn't fit within the zoning parameters, so they don't get to do it. There's a pattern emerging, I hope, here. The pattern emerging is, if you want something in your town, really need your code. Have I made that clear? Anything else? Okay, go ahead.
Pioneering problem.
The old pioneering problem. Okay. Anybody know what exactions are? Exactions? Some of you do. And you know, developers might call it extortion, okay, but it's not, okay? In Utah, well, remember, in Utah especially, development pays its own way. When development comes to the town, it creates impacts. We talked about some of those, you know? Like high density creates certain impacts as far as traffic goes, it creates impacts, you know, lots of other kinds of things. Development creates impacts, okay? Development shouldn't impose those impacts on the whole community. Development should pay for itself. So to the extent that a development is creating impact, the city gets to exact things from the developer to assuage those impacts. If the development's going to cause a lot more traffic, the city can ask the developer to build a road. If the development's going to cause, you know, everybody to flush their toilets, the city can ask the developer to put in pipe. You know, for the sewer, those kinds of things. And that's perfectly legal to do. It's perfectly normal because development should pay their own way. Okay? There's a limit to what you can ask them to do. Okay? If you ask them to do too much, you're taking their property and you're violating the Constitution. That's an excessive exaction. Exactions are fine, excessive exactions are illegal. when you ask people to do more than their share, when you ask people to solve a problem that they didn't create, when you ask people to build something that will benefit not just them, but somebody else. Aha! Well, what I just said, okay? If somebody comes along and wants to build over here, right, they're going to need a road. And I just said you can ask them to build a road, okay? But there's all these other vacant properties around them, right? And they're going to build this road, and then all these other people are going to develop, and they're going to be able to attach to that road and use that road, and they're not going to have to pay any money for it, right? Is that fair? It's not.
That's why there's districts set up for reimbursements.
Well, that's one of the ways to solve this problem, okay? Because a better way to illustrate the problem is using like water as a pipe, okay?
Or a water tank for that matter.
Water tank is good. Say I want to build one house and there's no water to my property, okay? And say it's going to take a 1-inch hose, 1-inch pipe in the ground that's going to go for 1 mile to get water to my property, okay? Well, I just told you that you can exact something from them to make them serve themselves. You don't have to put a big pipe in the ground if you're not building that stuff. They do, right? But does that make any sense? Because the guy next to them is going to build too. And if they have to build a 1-inch, put in a 1-inch pipe, you're going to end up with 2 1-inch pipes in the ground. And then the other 50 people come in, and they all put in a 1-inch pipe, and you have 50 1-inch pipes in the ground. Makes sense, right? What makes sense is to have the first guy put in an 8-inch pipe. Right? But you can't ask him to do that because you're asking him to solve a problem for other people. You're asking him to do more than you share. Okay? That's the pioneering problem. This guy comes along first. He's the first guy. It doesn't make any sense to not put an 8-inch pipe in the ground. But you can't ask him to put an 8-inch pipe in the ground. You want an 8-inch pipe in the ground, you know that he needs an 8-inch pipe in the ground because all these other guys are going to build and they're going to want to connect. But you can't ask this guy to do it, okay? This guy is pioneering, and the problem is you can't ask him to put that full pipe in the ground. You can only ask him to put a 1-inch pipe in the ground, okay? So what do you do? Well, you need an 8-inch pipe, right? How do you get that 8-inch pipe? That's the pioneering problem, okay? There are several ways to do it. One of the things is what you just said. You create a district that takes care of it, okay? What you're supposed to do is, you're not going to lie, what you're supposed to do is you're supposed to have him pitch in whatever the cost is of the 1-inch pipe and whatever the oversized cost is, the city is supposed to pay for. You're not going to lie. The reason why you're not going to lie that is because I don't know a lot of cities that have a whole lot of money to be doing stuff like that. So the city doesn't ever want to do that, so the city usually can't do that. But that's what they're supposed to do. So you have to figure out other ways, like creating a district, like impact fees. Impact fees can help solve the pioneering problem. Because when other people build, right, they can put money to the cost and pay back their share, you know, the impact fees. You can create what's called a pioneering agreement, where you agree with the developer. The developer says, I'll put it in each pipe if you will reimburse me as people build and get attached to that pipe, those kinds of things. None of those solutions are perfect. I'm not sure that any of them are even legal. But it's a problem that doesn't quite figure out a solution.
Who negotiates that problem? Who negotiates that?
Whoever the land use authority is, okay? So might be the planning commission, okay? If it's a subdivision, someone comes in with a subdivision, right? And they're putting in 10 homes, and you know that there's going to be 50 more homes next to it, okay? You're going to have to say to that guy, put it in an 8-inch pipe. And the guy's going to say, you can't force me to put it in an 8-inch pipe. So that's what you're going to hear in negotiations. How are we going to get that 8-inch pipe in the ground? It's still not violating your rights by asking you to do more than your share. It's a tough thing without a lot of solutions. But it's something to be aware of. My brain is full of this stuff, man. It's the exciting thing that I get to do all day long.
Is that the same thing as like a transformer for somebody to put in solar on their house? We make them pay to upgrade the transformer, or we did, I don't know what we still didn't want, but we still have to pay for them to upgrade the transformer, for them to put solar back on the grid. We get the first person in the cul-de-sac had to do it.
Yeah. And you can ask for that because they need to pay their own way. but they only pay their own, and they don't pay other people's way. And so if you've asked them to upgrade the transformer so that everyone else gets to do it too, and they don't have to do anything, then you're in trouble.
Yeah, but we can't do it unless. I mean, somebody else might do it later, but we can't do it for them.
I think it's a problem. It's a problem. It's a problem. Done?
Okay, so no. In development, but I wanted to come in that didn't have the road to get there.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, all the years were upset, like, you're going to be on the tiny road, and then, and I, we ended up tabling it because there wasn't a road to it. Like,
uh-huh.
I didn't know, we didn't know how to build anything there.
Uh-huh.
What should we have done?
Well, I mean, you should have had a conversation with the developer and say, you need to have a road. How are we going to get the road there?
Yeah, and since then we did. Mm-hmm. And they are agreed to make the road, and I think we did have to use something.
Mm-hmm. So that they didn't have to pay more than their share?
Yeah.
That's
right. They kind of help mitigate.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. Now, here's the thing. This is very strict in a way, right? If they're paying one penny more than their share, you violate the Constitution. Okay. Having said that, there's no way to make those calculations that precise. So you do what you can. You do what you can to try to make it so generally they're paying their share. Not only your share. This has been great.
Thank
any
you.
More questions? Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian. We appreciate everybody that's been here and involved in this. Good questions, good discussion. I will entertain a motion.
We're still having a meeting. Who seconded? Sorry, who seconded? Steve.
I'll entertain another motion.
I move that we reconsider.
Those in favor?
We stand adjourned.
I seriously did not even hear who did that.
Wait, I'm not sure who that. You got all the who made the motions. Who did the?
I didn't hear who adjourned. Was it Steve?
Steve made the motion. Laurianne, you adjourned.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm actually watching this meeting.